Welcome to the program for Thursday, January 10th, 2013, on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. It's Industry Chatter today, as we do every Thursday in the 3 o'clock hour. Happy to welcome today Paul Christman. He's Vice President for Public Sector Sales and Marketing for Dell, and in studio with me. And it's good to talk to you again, Paul. Nice to see you. Thank you for coming today.
Good afternoon. Thank you.
What kind of customers do you work with in the federal space, and what do you do for them? That's where we'll start.
So our customer base is the entire federal government, wherever it goes around the world. So we work with DOD customers worldwide. We work with civilian customers. And we also work with intelligence community customers. We also work with the integrators that support those marketplaces. That's part of my responsibilities, most of the things that happen here in the Washington area. But I'm also responsible for the state and local governments in the United States, plus the education customers. But the federal business is about 60%. And it's predominantly here in D.C.
Are you starting to see differences in the market, the federal market, compared to state and local and the other public sector markets you work with?
Similarities more than differences. I'll take one example that's in security. Cybersecurity here in the federal market, we call it cybersecurity, but security broadly defined. The states and the education customers are trying to replicate federal standards. So things like NSTIC, which is a bit of a technical term, but NSTIC is something that the federal government has produced. They're trying to move it down into the states. They're trying to take best practices. To some extent, public sector is public sector, and sometimes the mission is different, but the obligations and the constraints are very, very similar. You're spending taxpayer dollars. You need to be a good steward. Those sorts of things drive towards common safeguards, common business practices, and we try and, to the extent we can, translate from the federal market into the state and local market. But there's more commonalities than you'd ever think.
A lot of folks that I talk to that are selling into both of those spaces say that the state and local markets can be a predictor for what the federal government mm-hmm. might experience over the next several years because mm-hmm. of budget situations. Do you think that's fair?
The budget cycles for the two markets are very different these days. They've gotten very much out of sync. But using the states as almost an incubator or the local governments as incubators – for ideas on public service that then can percolate up, there is an opportunity for that to happen. So sometimes the service delivery models change a little bit more and the technology adoption changes a little bit more. When you can experiment on a smaller scale, the federal government has the issues of it has to design for the nation. A smaller city or county can have the opportunity to experiment with something that may be a little less proven. Crowdsourcing, for instance, using social media, connecting people through the internet in innovative ways is possible on a smaller scale. And I'm really happy when my state and local friends and customers get together with my federal friends and customers, and they're able to take those good ideas. Scope and scale is something that we design for, and the possibilities and the risk of I wouldn't say failure, but the risk of having the project not turn out, the federal government has a different view of it than the states.
The other issue, too, is budgets. We're in probably the fourth or fifth or in some states' cases sixth year of mm-hmm. trying to deal with tight budgets. That, in the state level, is driven a lot by balanced budget amendments. Yep. That states have to balance their budgets every single year. The federal government, obviously, not in that spot. But that's an area, too, where I wonder if what they're seeing might be a predictor for what agencies can expect.
Well, and that's where I think the feds and the states and the local governments are, as I said before, a little bit out of sync. They would normally flow together, but as the economic recovery is sustained, especially around property taxes and employment, which leads to payroll taxes, and you look at sales taxes, the primary drivers of the local economies, they're actually recovering in a very nice way. And it's been that slow, steady recovery that's been reliable enough for the states and the cities and the counties to get a handle on their budget. They're predicting, and I just saw a note on this from the National Association of State Budget Officers, they're predicting that by next fiscal year, the state and local governments will be back to pre-recession budget funding. The problem is they're going to have to get themselves out of the hole that they dug, and they're sort of going to have to repay their rainy day funds. So it's not going to be all sunshine and happiness, but it's different where the federal government is now trying to tackle the deficit, the fiscal cliff, and those sorts of issues. So they've gotten out of sync. And curiously enough, the recovery is going to be a little bit quicker, I think, in the state and local market rather than the feds, because the feds haven't really tackled the big vexing problems around spending and budgets and deficit, and that fight's yet to be fought.
Are there business lessons that you think you can take away from selling into that market over the past several years that would apply in the federal market as budgets get tighter?
I hate to say it, but it's the fiscal discipline, as you mentioned before, this fiscal discipline that's baked into the laws of the states that does require a balanced budget in some way, shape, or form for I think it's 46 of the 50 states. That idea, that fiscal discipline, is part of the DNA of those organizations, so they know how to more rapidly respond. We can get into a philosophical discussion about whether the federal government's the buffer for the longer term and they're able to deficit spend, and that's all for another day.
I'll take that as a very eloquent no.
I wish we had a little bit more discipline on the spend side, and I wish we had a little bit more discipline on the revenue side. But I think that the pressures are there. One of the governors that I talked to a long time ago, and this was many years before the recession started, he said a fiscal crisis is a terrible thing to waste.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel that we've missed an opportunity on the federal side to really tackle some of the biggest issues well outside of information technology, which is my business. But I think we've missed the opportunity, and we're just solving it incrementally rather than really looking at the bigger issues around how big should the government be.
But within the information technology realm, I still hear the word opportunity a lot over the people talk about the budget, and you would think it would be all gloom and doom and budgets are going to get smaller and bad things are going to happen and the sky will fall. But I still do hear that word opportunity quite a bit.
I hear the word opportunity, and usually I hear the word transformation next, because we realize that we can't deliver the service of government in the way that we had in the past, and that transformation is fueled by information technology. How we shop, how we plan our days, what we do has been transformed by information technology. I'm a little bit older than most, and I remember that when I got ready to go for a drive, I would grab a map. That is an alien concept now. The idea of GPS plus mobile devices has transformed the way we plan our day. That sort of transformation is still coming. The public sector still has to adopt it, breaking down delivery modes that are very labor-intensive or physically intensive. You can look at the federal government. You can also look at education and distance learning and all of the things that we're trying to do. That applies also to medicine and healthcare, which has a huge impact on the federal government.
Mm-hmm. As we think about the technological things that I'm sure you deal with every day and we talk about every day on this radio station, I wonder if we're even focusing on the right questions right now. We talk about data center consolidation, and we talk about cloud computing and server virtualization. And I wonder sometimes, those are all very important issues for the IT community and government to think about, admittedly. But I wonder if we're thinking big enough when we're dealing with the budget situations that we're dealing with. I wonder if maybe we're not picking around the edges a little bit.
I think we focus on technique more than we focus on outcome. And when you mention all those things, server virtualization or cloud computing or outsourcing or insourcing or anything else, that's really technique. I try to pull back and say, what is it we're trying to change or accomplish? And sometimes that's the most challenging problem, even within information technology. What is the intended outcome? What is it we're trying to do? Let's stop talking about how we're going to do it and then have debates and procurements and contracts that document all those, the how. I'd rather talk about the what. What's the objective? And some of the business that Quest, now part of Dell, is getting into is forcing us to look at what's the outcome that's intended rather than what's the technique that we use to get there.
You've taken me in the acquisition and procurement direction a lot faster than I anticipated to, but I want to ask you about something else when we come back from the break. Paul Christman of Dell is my guest on Industry Chatter today on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. We'll be back in just a moment.
I've been looking at solar chargers for my iPhone. Last week I was out and about and my iPhone went dead as a doornail. And I thought to myself, you know, there's all this sunlight. Why couldn't I get a solar charger for this? And there are a number of solar chargers out there. Now, the charge time varies anywhere from 6 hours to 12 hours, depending on which one you get. But at least you can get something going.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
This is an urgent message for all individuals with extremely large credit card debt. No matter how much you owe on your credit cards, the company that has settled more debt than anyone in the U.S. could settle your debt too. While you make one low monthly program payment, you have the opportunity to hear how low your monthly program payment could be for free. This free information is available now simply by calling Freedom Debt Relief at 1-800-700-6518. I repeat, if you have extremely large credit card debt, you now have the ability to reduce your total debt and get one simple low monthly program payment. This could allow you to resolve your debt faster than you ever thought possible. But you should act quickly. Call Freedom Debt Relief now to learn how much you could save. 1-800-700-6518. Again, this life-changing information is available for free. To find out how much you may be able to save, call today. 1-800-700-6518. That's 1-800-700-6518. 1-800-700-6518.
What is the U.S. Census Bureau's technology innovation strategy? How is Census using new technologies to improve services and products? What is Census doing to leverage innovation and advances in technology while balancing the stewardship between innovation and technology? Join host Michael Keegan as he explores these questions and more with Avi Bender, Chief Technology Officer, U.S. Census Bureau, next week on the Business of Government Hour.
Diary entry, August 15th. My joints ache. Today I can hardly move. I need some answers.
September 3rd. I'm tired all the time. What's going on?
June 8th. I woke up with a rash on my face. I want to know why.
For answers, ask your doctor the right question. Could I have lupus? For answers, for support, for hope, visit couldihavelupus.gov or call 1-800-994-9662. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Office on Women's Health and the Ad Council.
The government spent more on immigration enforcement last year than on the FBI, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and the Secret Service combined. I'm Emily Kopp. On Friday's Federal Drive, we'll tell you where all that money went. And some Fortune 500 companies want the government's help fighting cyber threats. It all starts at 6 on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. And for the latest federal news, check out federalnewsradio.com.
You're listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Dell is my guest on Industry Chatter today. Now, Paul, the phrase that you used a few minutes ago I think was very eloquent, that organizations, in the case of what we're interested in, federal agencies, focus sometimes on technique more so than outcome. What do you think is industry's role in working with the agencies to try to change that dynamic? There are two reasons that I think that this might be potentially problematic. One is because that's standard operating procedure, and to be fair, not just in federal agencies, but in private sector organizations and other public organizations, that's historically been SOP. And the second reason why I think that this is a potential problem is this is what leads at least to shiny object syndrome. Tell me where you see industry fitting in there to help agencies but being careful not to drag them along when they're not ready to move yet.
Yeah, that's a good question. I think one of the transformations that we're seeing, Quest Software now being part of Dell, is insight into a much larger organization that can engage a customer much earlier in the needs definition process. I was actually having an interesting conversation with one of our business partners this morning, and they are an external third party. They are focusing much more now on needs assessment and helping not make the decision for an agency, but helping frame the way a decision could be made in a particular area. In this case, it was cybersecurity and access management and some very technical things. But their job, they said, was mostly helping people define what it is they wanted to achieve. And the feedback that we had gotten from the business partner was all of the IT people on the other side of the conference room table, all they wanted to do was rush to, and that means product selection is X, or the consultant that we need to use is Y. And they said, please stop going that far down. Let's start talking about what it is we want to achieve. And the natural evolution of information technology people who are bombarded with sales and marketing messages is they have to select a product first and then find a reason for it. We're pulling back, and as part of Dell having a much larger services component than Quest ever did, we're starting to participate in those discussions much earlier. Our third-party business partners are able to also influence and suggest ways to make decisions. Again, not make the decision, but how to make the decision. That pulls us back from the religious wars around platforms and devices and all these other things that get in the way of establishing goal and purpose before action.
We chatted about that a little bit during the commercial break. Is it your sense that agencies are kind of over that the religious war, as you call it? Are they on to the idea that it really is about the delivery of the information and the device, and how that's delivered is less important?
I think we are. I think as a general consumer of information rather than a decider on devices, I think the information is becoming far more important. If you look at the way we consume things, and I carry a device, and in my own family, we have a mixture of platforms, both personal computers, email providers, network providers, as well as handheld devices, and we just expect it all to work. And we're not interested in managing the devices individually. We're interested in getting our email, managing our contacts, making our lives much, much easier. If we extrapolate that out, the rise of things like big data, the rise of information being more important than the device that it's been produced on or stored in or delivered on, those sorts of transformations are happening because the information is becoming so, so important. People are starting to understand large data sets, what can be gained from it. Being able to consume geospatial data, being able to consume that kind of information, regardless of the end device or regardless of the network you're on or regardless of the provider, is becoming much more expected.
I'll refer back to the example that you used of the conference with one of your partners. And it strikes me that agencies maybe are struggling with the idea that they will be more conceptual thinkers than mechanical thinkers over the next maybe half decade to decade. And it's kind of crystallized, in my view, in the big data conversation that we're having right now, where the conversation really is probably most likely should be revolving around what can I do with all of this stuff, and not necessarily how do I organize it or what software do I use to analyze it or any of those kinds of things, but first thinking, man, I got all this stuff. How can I possibly make this useful? Because there are a million things here that I probably never thought of.
And geospatial data is one of those things that has so many different purposes. And again, we'll go back to this partner discussion we were having this morning. Imagine if you could link geospatial data to identity management. Imagine if you could, if a device happens to move from position A to position B, restrict or modify its security rights. And or you could turn off a device if it happens to migrate outside of a predefined geospatial area. That's the connection of this information that is really, really exciting. Now, we look at these things and we're imagining them now, but there are places where this has been happening for a very, very long time, and just this collection of information has been happening a long time. The management of it, healthcare in particular, is going to be a huge challenge for us going forward. The collection of medical information from a variety of sources, it's never going to be aggregated into a data warehouse, but it needs to be managed. And it needs to be secure, and a whole series of people need to have selective access rights to it on a variety of devices. That's where things start to get really exciting, and those are some of the bigger technical challenges that we are starting to look at.
Okay, another thought I want to pull out of there and talk about, you mentioned the requirements process, and I want to get back to that when we come back from the break on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Dell, my guest on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We'll continue in a moment.
Trust your home and family safety to Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else. You can control your system remotely, get texts, emails, even video clips of events going on around your home. Whether you need a basic system at $18.95 a month or the latest technology, call Ackerman Security today and get up to 3 months of basic monitoring free. 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
I'm Beyonce with an important message about hunger in America. Did you know 1 in 8 people struggle with hunger? Over 12 million children live in homes where there isn't always enough food. Food banks are experiencing more demand than ever. Show Your Helping Hand is a nationwide campaign with the goal of helping Feeding America deliver millions of meals to local food banks. Please join me in showing a helping hand to fight hunger. More information is available at showyourhelpinghand.com.
Eagle Hoops fans, the best seats in Bender Arena for the 2012-2013 season are just a phone call away. Call the AU Athletics Ticket Office at 202-885-TIXX today to place your $50 deposit on 2012-2013 season tickets to see AU Eagles men's basketball. Season tickets are the only way to secure the best sideline reserve chair back seats all season long. Place your season ticket deposit at 202-885-TIXX today and buy American.
The Washington region is made up of powerful people and powerful places. And now there's PowerJobs.com, a career site made just for Washington's top talent. Brought to you by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com specializes in jobs in Washington's most influential industries. Defense, energy, finance, government, healthcare, technology, and more. From companies like SAIC and the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. Finally, a career site made for you. PowerJobs.com, empowering today's top talent.
Congratulations on landing the job. I'm really excited for you.
Thanks. How's your search going?
The job market's tight. I mean, I can barely get an interview. Yeah. And I've got student loans to deal with. You're lucky, you know. The National Guard paid your loans off.
Luck? The Guard was a smart decision, one you can still make.
The National Guard Student Loan Repayment Program can pay up to $50,000 of your existing student loans. Get the details at NationalGuard.com.
Sponsored by the D.C. National Guard, aired by the Maryland, D.C. Delaware Broadcasters Association and this station.
Sick and smoking. From the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, I'm Ira Dreyfuss. With HHS HealthBeat, smoking can lead to diseases that can drive you to a hospital, and the craving can drive some people to keep up smoking even after they arrive. Massachusetts General Hospital in Boston is among those with a ban on smoking in the buildings, but the ban does not extend outdoors, also commonly the case. Researcher Susan Regan reports on what her survey of smoker patients found.
Patients were asked whether they had smoked at any time during their stay in the hospital, and about 18% of the patients we surveyed acknowledged smoking during their hospital stay.
Regan recommends that if the hospital offers smoking cessation help, such as counseling and nicotine patches, get it. The study in Archives of Internal Medicine was supported by the National Institutes of Health. Learn more at healthfinder.gov. HHS HealthBeat is a production of the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services. I'm Ira Dreyfuss.
How do government program managers make course corrections when a mission-critical IT system goes awry? Join a firm at the January 17th luncheon at the Hamilton Plaza Hotel for a detailed look at how federal agencies are steering complex programs to mission success and navigating the narrow path to helping troubled programs. Register today for Affirm's Program Management Lessons Learned, Steering a Course to Success at Affirm.org. That's Affirm.org.
Want the latest Department of Defense news? Listen every Wednesday for DoD Wednesday on Federal News Radio. Wednesday afternoons at 2, Federal News Radio DoD reporter Jared Serbu hosts On DoD, a discussion with senior managers about how the department meets its mission. Then stick around Wednesday afternoons at 3 when in-depth host Francis Rose brings you Pentagon Solutions, a deep dive into the issues and challenges of the defense community. All this plus our daily DoD updates at 40 past the hour, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
We're back on In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Dell's my guest on Industry Chatter today. You talked about the ability and the benefit to the agency of being in on the requirements process earlier. This is something that industry and agencies have gone back and forth on for probably since there have been agencies in industry. And there are any number of reasons why agencies hesitate to do that. Are you seeing the results of Mythbusters at all yet? And one of the outgrowths, one of the things Dan Gordon was going for was that collaboration earlier on in the process and helping agencies to understand what's possible before they start asking for what they really want. Is that manifesting itself yet?
I wish I could say yes. Unfortunately, when we're faced with the budget situation we've been in for the last year, 2 years, I think what happens is people gravitate towards what's safe, what's documented, what can be explained, rather than try and push. Lately, the appetite on the agency side to be daring, to be audacious, is really, it's not there. We're seeing much more of a color inside the lines mentality. It's a challenge when somebody says, well, geez, maybe we should talk to this person, and then all of a sudden you've got a procurement officer and a compliance officer that raises their hands. As soon as the hand gets raised, the idea stops.
Mm-hmm.
It's a challenge. The other idea that we have is really this idea of vendors, and I'm unapologetically a vendor. I'm there to encourage you to buy my things and employ my consultants. If that's the case, then I plainly state it. I'd like to find somebody else, aside from myself, that could help in that early requirements phase, that can build a business model where that's their job and they don't mind being precluded from the delivery. So there isn't this idea of directed business or influenced procurement. In the information technology business, I think there's enough room for both kinds of people. Both kinds of organizations, help them make the decision, and then actually go and implement it. We'll see. We'll see where that goes. But procurement, and we were talking about this during the break, the procurement process lately, the last 2 years or so, the procurement process has gotten even more challenging, and the contracting world has gotten even more challenging.
The reason that strikes me as odd is because it seems like a contradiction what agencies say they want versus what they're actually doing. Am I reading something wrong there? Because they're saying, show us a lot of innovation and we want to do things differently and we know we need to change and budget constraints are pushing us in this direction and so on. But then I'm hearing you say that when it really comes right down to doing the deal, they're looking for something that they know is 100% foolproof. They're not going to show up in the headlines. They're not going to have problems. They're not going to have to go to a tech stat session on it and all of that. Yep. Am I on target there?
Lowest cost, technically compliant. Yeah. At the end of the day, somebody's going to say, did you get the best, cheapest solution? It's a real challenge. It's a real challenge to invest up front and then be faced with, you know, you're going to go through the ringer. Some of the agencies are changing that a little bit, and there have been pushes for strategic sourcing, consolidated sourcing, which tries to take into account a broader spectrum of either time. So we're not just looking at a single transaction, but looking at the total value delivered on that contract. And it's encouraging to see some of those strategic sourcing initiatives actually saving the government and the taxpayer money. And it also streamlines the cost, and it allows us to move into a trusted vendor, pre-approved vendor, and it allows the agency to adopt and acquire technology without a whole series of upfront costs. The challenge for strategic sourcing is they're immediately reducing the number of players. And just like there's consolidation going on in the technology business in the provider side, there's consolidation and vendor down select happening on the agency side because they're trying to get best least cost. And the procurement side of strategic sourcing is at least an effort to get away from squeezing every single nickel out of every single procurement to survive whatever requirement there may be.
One of the advantages that I see from it sounds like you're confirming it in strategic sourcing is the concept that if I have a brown wrench that will solve whatever the problem is, and you have a blue pair of pliers that will solve whatever the problem is, the agency may not have determined ahead of time that they needed either one of those things, but we can both demonstrate that they'll work and both be considered for that work moving forward at a number of different agencies, where on a straight LPTA, neither one of us might qualify if we can't produce whatever the tool is cheap enough. Mm-hmm. Am I getting it there?
The challenge that we have in the technology space is that the commodity side of the business that could be, you know, to use your example, a wrench or a pair of pliers, yeah, they sometimes can do the same thing. We're moving very rapidly out of this idea of commodity. It becomes much more custom solution oriented, and it's harder to say they're equivalent. It's the problems that we're solving these days focus less on the individual devices and much more on the logic and the solution provided. So it becomes more challenging. It becomes solution-oriented. I'm not sure that in my business I would see that interchangeability or that common cost comparison that could be made.
It sounds, though, like what I'm hearing you and I've heard many other people say is that while that's the conversation that is most logical in the acquisition community right now, since we're still focusing on, in many cases, on LPTA and what's the cheapest, easiest way I can get through this, the commoditization part is hard for the agencies to get away from, and they like to focus on that because they can do it. I don't have to worry as much about a protest because I can easily document how I came to this decision, yada, yada, yada.
It's a real struggle when we have contracting and intellectual property clauses in everything from the FAR to DFAR and all the rest of them that were really invented for a physical world, and we try and apply it to a solutions model or even a software model. We often trip on really basic things which haven't been addressed in decades, and that's one of the areas that we're spending an awful lot of time now, is to try and drag people forward into solutions-oriented or intellectual property-oriented rather than physical property-oriented solutions. I'm spending an enormous amount of time looking now at Dell contracts and how we address those from adding Quest into those contracts. And so as a result, in the time that Quest has been acquired by Dell, we're having to do an inventory of these things, and it's just resurrecting some, oh, geez, you mean we have to address all of this stuff? It's really a challenge for us to look at those kinds of contracts, and we wish there was some more modernization around procurement and contracting.
Well, one thing that we're seeing in the software field in particular, but IT in general, is a very heavily accelerated deliverables schedule. And we'll talk a little bit about that when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Dell, my guest, and we'll continue our conversation in a minute.
Listen to Fed Talk on Federal News Radio 1500 AM every Friday morning at 11. Brought to you by the attorneys of Shaw, Bransford, and Roth. Fed Talk features live interviews with guests from the federal community sharing their insights on issues that affect you. Call in or email questions or comments to fedtalk@federalnewsradio.com. Fed Talk is sponsored by GEICO. This week on Fed Talk, host Bill Bransford will be joined by the National Law Enforcement Officers Memorial Fund to discuss law enforcement trends and statistics from 2012.
I'm on a mission to spread the word about COPD through music. COPD stands for chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. My grandfather suffered from symptoms of it, and COPD is the fourth leading cause of death in the U.S. I'm Billy Ray Cyrus, and I drive for COPD. Looks like people are starting to get the message. Anyone age 35 and older who has smoked as little as 100 cigarettes could be at risk. Visit driveforcopd.com today and talk to your doctor.
From tight budgets to technology challenges, 2013 will be a time of continued uncertainty and great opportunity for government leaders and contractors. In our special report, Top 3 for 2013, Federal News Radio goes directly to the source, asking over 20 of the federal community's biggest thinkers what they believe will be the issues affecting agencies and industry in the new year. Hear what they have to say and read their Top 3 for 2013. Find it at federalnewsradio.com. Search 2013.
Newsmakers on In Depth with Francis Rose.
The first vendor has made it through the FedRAMP accreditation process. Dave McClure is GSA's Associate Administrator at the Office of Citizen Services and Innovative Technologies.
This is the first time cloud products are really being put through some rigorous security evaluations. So we're learning a lot about how cloud computing models and services and platforms fit into the government context.
Hear the entire interview online, federalnewsradio.com/in-depth.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Dell, my guest on Industry Chatter today. For any number of different reasons that we can go into, Paul, you're seeing an extremely accelerated deliverable schedule. Sometimes it's budget pressures. Sometimes it is an agile approach that agencies are supposed to take to completing projects or executing projects. But you're accountable a lot faster than you have ever been before. How is that changing the way that you're approaching customers in the first place when you're starting to bid on work? And how is it changing the way that you're delivering that work once you have the deal?
Yeah, those are good questions. And one of the things that I tie all of this stuff back to is the budget uncertainty. Because people are not sure and they cannot rely on a steady stream in funding because the continuing resolution becomes the norm these days, the tolerance for long-term projects is greatly reduced. The need to show rapid return because there's not an assured funding into the long future, plus the idea that we, Quest Software, now part of Dell, get pulled into projects typically when they're in crisis stage. We are being asked to address what normally would have taken a year in a month. And there is zero tolerance. You need to be on your A game. This is like running the 2-minute offense. The end of the game, the game's on the line, you're behind, you've got to score, and there's no opportunity for failure. And we're seeing this more and more often as projects have been delayed and deferred and postponed as much as humanly possible. Now, when funding becomes available, it's go now, got to go now. And as a result, we're really seeing a shortchange on a good, healthy business process plan. And we're moving towards action probably faster than we would like, even though we typically move as quickly as our clients want to go. We're seeing a shortchange on the front end and more of – a desire to see rapid action rather than prudent planning.
If they're have less tolerance for long-term projects, are they then willing to scale back their ambitions in some cases? Or they
Certainly not.
Yeah.
I wish it were true.
Right.
So the tolerance, the frequency or the probability of error when you move quickly without a prudent plan is there. But people are making bold statements about we must go, we will all be gone. And one client that we're working with is migrating their email system into the cloud. They've made a public statement that it will be done on this date. I would say that our engineers and our product designers have more experience doing that task than anyone on the planet. And we're looking at their goals and saying these are aggressive. They're audacious. They are very, very ambitious. We will help you get there. But this is not the normal speed of public sector. This is hyper-accelerated.
And those kinds of accelerations are happening primarily because of budget, or are they happening because of other factors also?
It's the lack of available budget, but it's also the idea that things have been postponed and deferred and delayed as long as they could. We're seeing this both on the project side, but also on the hardware side. As budgets became tighter, the life cycle of a piece of software, the life cycle of a piece of hardware was extended to the point where now it's being replaced for compatibility reasons. It's being replaced in hardware because it's just worn out. The idea that there are so many of those projects coming due now because we haven't been spending enough on our infrastructure, that idea says, okay, you're going to be in crisis mode for the next couple of years. Good opportunity for information technology suppliers because we're starting to come back out of that trough of delayed purchasing. But when that happens, there's this pent-up demand and pent-up need to accomplish quite a bit of things very, very quickly.
And it's funny that you mentioned that because I thought of that phenomenon as I've heard the last couple of days about the new car numbers coming out of Detroit. And it's the same thing. The average car on the road is 12 years old, I saw on TV this morning. Mm-hmm. And even though we're in an economic situation where you wouldn't think people are going out and buying new cars, they really have to because they got to get to work. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me it's the same. It's a parallel in the federal government. This work has to get done. It's not like the private sector where you can say, well, we'll patch around it and patch around it and patch around it and patch around it. This is stuff that's integral to the operation of the United States.
And I've talked to a lot of agency heads and I've talked to information technology professionals. And what's happening, and it's been transforming over the last probably two decades, is the information technology infrastructure becomes the agency itself. So much of what many agencies do is derived from the information itself, that it is imperative that we invest in this like we invest in weapons systems, like we invest in human beings. This idea of investing in the infrastructure, it's like a road. It's like a building. It needs investments in order to stay current, in order to serve its mission.
Well, let's talk about that when we come back to wrap up, Paul, because It kind of goes back to what I mentioned at the beginning of the program, where are we even really asking the right questions or talking about the right ideas? So let's noodle that through a little bit more when we come back on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Paul Christman of Dell, my guest on Industry Chatter today, and we'll wrap up in just a moment.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Please join me this week for my special guest, Ben Shaw, Industrial Security Officer with MTN Government Services. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by the premier law firm of Odin, Feldman & Pittleman, located in Reston, Virginia, serving the entire D.C. metro area with clients across the country. For more information on the firm, visit us on the web at ofplaw.com.
Hi, this is O'Donna Matthews. What does three decades of service add up to? For the Capital Area Food Bank, it includes these important numbers. Distributing 25 million pounds of food to nearly 500,000 people through a network of 700 partner agencies. 30 years, it's a long time. But the mission continues to make sure that no one is left hungry. To learn more, contribute, or volunteer, visit capitalareafoodbank.org.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show, Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Pissarro as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Enzymatic Therapy and Nordic Naturals.
When every moment matters and a hand reaches out, when someone gives blood and a life is saved, that moment when heartbreak turns to hope, you're there through the American Red Cross. Every day, the Red Cross responds to nearly 200 neighborhood emergencies, and your support makes it possible. Use this moment to join us today. Visit redcross.org.
Hey everybody, it's David and Nikki Nellis from the wildly popular and always topical Foodie and the Beast.
Next Sunday, January 13th, we are kicking it off with coffee. Joel Finkelstein is in. He's the owner and head roaster at Quala Coffee. We're going to talk wine with Mira Winery out of California. And Joe Nathan is back. We're talking sips and sups.
That's Foodie and the Beast next Sunday and every Sunday live at 11 on 1500 AM.
Working together, keeping the nation safe, is the focus of ASEA's 12th annual Homeland Security event, February 26th through 28th at the Grand Hyatt Washington. Speakers from all levels of government, military, and industry will dialogue on cybersecurity, critical infrastructure protection, identity management, information and intelligence sharing, emergency management, mobile communications, and more. Register to attend or exhibit at AFSEA.org, keyword homeland. That's AFSEA.org, keyword homeland.
Thanks for listening to In Depth with Francis Rose on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Paul Chrisman of Dell, my guest. And we started this conversation off, Paul, by touching on the fact that maybe we're not thinking about the right things, or maybe we're not thinking about them at the right level. Maybe we should be thinking bigger. And I hear from time to time from my friends in the technology community and government that, hey, I am so focused on what's happening now and the budget situations that are forcing me to do whatever I'm doing. You know, so you talked about some of the truncated schedules that agencies are trying to do things on and so on, that I don't have time to think about what the landscape will look like for me or my agency or the government as a whole 2 years, 5 years, 10 years from now. And yet some of the things that we've touched on throughout the course of the hour almost require, I think, that level of thought, or that maybe level is indicating higher than I should be. But thinking big seems to be something we're not getting a lot of right now. What kind of space do you think we can create, and how can we create it to allow these people in these agencies who are doing really big things to think big enough to go that direction?
Creating the space, I think, requires sort of separation of responsibilities. You're always going to have your triage rapid response team that has to deal with the present tense problems. If you define present tense as something happening in the next 12 months, in our world, it takes about that long in order to get pretty much anything off the ground. Somebody's got to have a separate job. Somebody's got to have a separate job that says, what is it that we're trying to achieve long term? Certain thoughts must be put into, for instance, healthcare. And I look at healthcare right now as we're looking at the triage side of things. We're helping automate doctors' offices. We're trying to help put a baseline of technology into the service provider. But we're also now trying to look at the back end. What do we do once that's done? There really is a separation of responsibility. The objective there should be to improve quality of care and reduce cost of delivering health care. Not just saying, oh, how much are we going to pull out of Medicaid or Medicare, but really pushing to improve the outcome, reduce the cost, and at the same time have people that are dealing with the triage every day. Healthcare for me is probably one of those areas where I see the best opportunity for us as a country to improve outcome, and it's going to be so important in the next 20 or 30 years for that to happen. But we're still focusing on the techniques, and we're not getting to, even after the Affordable Care Act has been validated and so forth, we're not getting to the real issue at hand, which is I'm going to improve health care as well as reduce expense through the use of information technology.
All of those concepts are tremendously important. And yet I think that maybe we've lost the ability to really think big and really plan big, that we're kind of in a situation now where we're just kind of riding the bike and we can't really get off and really think that far ahead.
I use an analogy sometimes with my management team. I say we can continue to pedal faster, but it's like the kid that's going downhill. You can't pedal as fast as you need to go, you need to change the gears.
Mm.
And unless you change the gears through some sort of transformation, you're never going to be able to pedal fast enough. You can't get to the scale and scope without doing some sort of transformation. And I use that word transformation at the beginning of our conversation. Transformation is necessary to look at things differently, to act differently, to behave differently. But it's really about changing the gears in order to get a multiplier and a gear ratio that allows you to accomplish more than you had in the past. I think it's one of the reasons I find information technology so exciting, because I look at it as a transformative gear changer to allow people to do much, much more. It needs to be part of that discussion that says, if we're going to think big, if we're going to accomplish and achieve big, we need to change how we approach the problems.
We only have about a minute left, but it strikes me that the next step in that evolution then is maybe discontinuing thinking about IT as something that's over here and we also do that, and thinking about how it really is now embedded in everything that an agency does to serve the end customer, taxpayer, or whoever.
I absolutely think so, and I think information technology has gone away from being in the glass room, and it's now become pervasive in everyone's life, whether they're a student or a citizen or a young or old. It's become an expectation, and it's a blessing and it's a curse, and it's an opportunity for us to deliver better services in the public sector.
Paul, it's been a terrific conversation. Thank you very much for being here today.
Thanks,
I've really enjoyed it. Paul Christman is Vice President for Public Sector Sales and Marketing for Dell, and you can hear my conversation with him posted later this afternoon at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. Hour number 2 of In Depth with Francis Rose coming in a moment on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.